It's time for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So strap yourselves in as we meet the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hi.
Niall.
It's me.
And me, Brian.
Are you going to put in cheering? Because other than that, that's going to sound really weird.
Let's find out whether I put cheering or not. Yes, this is the replacement for Let's Go Goku, the replacement for Let's Go JoJo. It is the all-purpose weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Let's go! We may have mentioned on the previous episode of Let's Go Goku, the last episode of Let's Go Goku.
Well, it might be the last, but yeah.
Well, I think if we come back to Dragon Ball, we'll do it in this podcast.
That's true, yeah.
That we're going to call it Let's Go Anime, but then I realised there's a blog called Let's Anime, which I actually read, and I thought that's probably why that sounded like a good name. I did come up with some other names before settling on just going with Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So if you prefer any of these, let me know. I had Let's Go Roro, the weekly panicky Great Dane podcast. Let's Go Ororo, the weekly X-Men podcast. Let's Go Toto, the weekly Wizard of Oz podcast.
Not the band, no?
No, not the band. Popo, the racist Dragon Ball Z podcast.
No, thanks.
Also about the police.
Let's Go So-So, the weekly mediocre anime podcast.
Yeah, you don't want to aim for mediocre. Come on.
Let's Go Dodo, the weekly Bob Clampett podcast. Let's Go Ho-Ho, the weekly Christmas anime podcast.
There's already a kind of podcast out there kind of like that, but it's Christmas movies, so...
Yeah, we probably could do a Christmas anime one, anyway. Let's Go I Should Coco, the weekly Supergrass podcast. Let's Go Boba Bobo, Boba Bo, the weekly
How
Boba
did I know
Bobo,
that was coming?
Boba Bobo podcast. Let's Go No-No, the weekly Ulysses 31 podcast.
I'd like a bit more with that.
Yeah. And lastly, Let's Go Let's and Go, the weekly Tamiya Mini 4-wheel drive racing car anime podcast. Because that was the other thing I noticed, is when I searched to see if anyone had a podcast called Let's Go Anime, is it just brought things about the anime Let's and Go.
Let's see.
Not to be confused with us. So yes, I settled on Let's Go. And this week we're going to be talking about Mr. Osomatsu episodes 1 and 2, One Punch Man episodes 1 and 3, and maybe, if Dwayne lets us, Lupin the Third episode 1. And
oh, absolutely.
Concrete Revolutio episode 1. So where shall we begin?
Where indeed?
Where do you think we should begin? Start with those one-shot ones, then we... Get them out of the way so Dwayne's not waiting for us to finish at the end.
Yeah, I guess.
start with one, because I'm curious to hear about what you thought of him.
Okay, Lupin the Third. I enjoyed this first episode a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. It's got my engine revved up in more ways than one.
Yes. So the story is basically Lupin is getting married.
What?
Exactly.
This is the nice Lupin from the Miyazaki ones. This is the asshole one, right?
Oh yes.
I know they're defined by their jacket color, but I can never remember which is which.
He's not a super asshole, but he turns out to be more of an asshole than he seems to be at the start of the episode. But that's all right, because the person that he's marrying is a bit of an asshole herself.
Perfect.
They are perfect for each other, it turns out. And it's all on San Marino, this first episode. Because I believe everything is going to be either in San Marino or Italy.
Mm.
As far as I know. And, yeah, it feels like Lupin the Third. And the animation is great. The opening animation on the Japanese version is super great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. It's just so good. I'm just so looking forward. It can't be this good forever. I had to build him up already. Come crashing down. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's just like a reassuring hug from a man who's pickpocketing you as you do it.
Yeah. Like it is, like, you know, fairly, it's very kind of like straightforward as far as the Lupin story goes. But they did kind of throw you a few curveballs there when, like, you know, they presumed they'd been, like, double-crossed by Fujiko, but actually it was somebody else all along who you had to know during an episode. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, okay. She's not always the one ruining their plans.
Yes. And the most insightful line of the episode is when Zenigata bursts into the wedding and Lupin's bride-to-be says, "Who's this, your boyfriend?"
I can see how you'd make the mistake with Zenigata.
Come on, Aspect.
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, like, he's in the cast, basically, list, even though he's technically the bad guy, I guess?
Yes, and it's like the shot of them all together at the start.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
they're all doing a heist somehow.
Yeah, and there's like a shot at the very last episode which seems to lead into the next episode. So I don't know whether there's going to be some sort of overarching plot.
I don't know. They went into a lot of detail about the nine values, control San Marino. So I'm wondering if, like, are they going to get on the wrong side? And that guy we saw at the end with his stern countenance, is he some kind of agent for them? Going to, like, deal with these upstart thieves coming in and causing trouble in his country. Maybe, maybe not.
Anything else to say about this Lupin III? Episode 1?
I'm just excited for more, hopefully for more. Yes, yeah. So I see what, they're doing, like, a real character designs, like, no, a real character. That's a kind of Lupin style. But maybe that's the way in their outline, the way that the shaded made in the backgrounds too, are getting, like, they're taking a few cues from a woman named Fujiko Miya there. There's a little hair of it there, you know, just kind of this part of that visual style that's imported into this.
That was the thing I was going to ask, because that show was so good looking, like, it's a hard act to follow, I would have thought. So, yeah, nice.
It was good looking, like, definitely, like, in its little, you know, at times it got pretty, like, kind of choppy when it was moving, but for the most part, I liked how the show looked myself.
Okay.
But this has animation, it has, like, the movement, it has the pacing, like, down. It's frenetic. And for a show that's going to involve a lot of chasing, it's good to get that down right at the gate.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Concrete Revolutio. Which I watched the first episode, and Niall watched the first episode. So this involves... So it's a two-piece story in the first. We got one set 5 years, I think, after the first part. It sort of interlaces through the first episode. So in the first episode, it involves a sort of a Ishinomori-type superhero who works for the government, this bureau who looks after super beings. Is... enlists the help of a waitress / magical girl in trying to spy on what he suspects is a legal deal going on, but it turns out to be part of an alien invasion plot. And that sort of involves an Ultraman-type superhero and them tracking him down. And at the end of that story, the magical girl is basically recruited into this government agency. The other half of the story is that same magical girl hunting down the man who recruited her 5 years ago.
Dun, dun, dun.
And he says he's never going to go back to the agency.
He's defected to the other side, maybe he's just gone rogue.
Yes. And we kind of get the idea of the sort of reason why he might become disillusioned in those 5 years, because in this first one, he appears to kill the Ultraman-type hero, as well as shrink the alien invader down to the size of a matchbox and put him in a matchbox. But it turns out he wasn't so bad after all, and basically they returned the Ultraman-type alien who'd bonded to this human to his home planet, and then as the human would be dying otherwise, they then bonded him to the alien invader's body and turned him into a separate superhero.
Yes, thereby making him good?
Yes. It's all done with a lot of style, a lot of really great character design. It's Bones, so the production quality is of the sort of generally higher level that you expect from a Bones show. and I enjoyed it a whole lot.
Yeah. I like, before I got on to watching it, I was, all I kept hearing about this is that, wow, this is so manic and crazy, it's really hard to follow. And watching it, I thought, this is pretty straightforward. It's clearly, like, indicated which timeline is happening, which, you know, because the characters look different, the scenery looks different. It's pretty clear which is which, like, and if you've seen an episode of Lost, you can follow this, no problem. It's just, like, giving a glimpse of events that are yet to happen. And, you know, it's a very simple thing, seeing what's going to happen down the line to get you, like, invested in what's happening in the present or the past or wherever, wherever it is, because you want to see how it happens. That's pretty standard kind of storytelling, like, type of thing. I couldn't get what people's problem was with it. I thought people watching anime were much better at trying to, non-linear narratives, I guess, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I was at the same point. I was like, I'd read the same thing. So people saying there's too many ideas in it, and there's not. There is basically one idea. That idea is, what if all types of super beings existed in the same world?
Yeah, I'm not even sure that's the first time that's been done, is it?
No. Like Top Ten. Oh. Alan Moore's Top Ten does that exact same thing.
Everything is happening at the same time. All, like, it's the standard thing I've seen multiple times where all the gods were real kind of thing. Just try and mishmash them together and you're done. That's not confusing.
Think of like a superhero comic book. You're going to have mutants, you're going to have like cyborgs, you're going to have like magical beings all occupying the same space, or maybe even working together on the same team. And just go with it. Because, you know, if people couldn't get them, then, magical girl, she's flying around on a thing, and she, like, summons a cloud, and comes alive, adds the shield, and it's like, I can't follow up. She's magical. She did it for magic, obviously. So, just roll with it, dude. It's, enjoy the ride.
Yeah, the key thing with her, so that you get an idea of she's obviously changed as well, is because in the past, when she's still a waitress, is like her magical girl mascot tells her that she can't use her powers directly on living beings. But then 5 years later, she's waving around a Cyborg 009 ray gun at the other guy. It's like, okay.
Well, I guess that gets out of it. That's a loophole.
Some exchange.
It's a magical ray gun.
Well, it could be just a regular ray gun, right? Because then that would work.
It shoots magic.
Okay.
Also, what's up with her little psychic? You know, she seems like an old... the space standard blouse. You couldn't put them in a pocket or nothing. No pockets on that apron that she's wearing in the cafe. I don't know. I guess you gotta put that in somewhere. I also liked as well the main dude. What's his name?
Well, actually, this is the thing. It's maybe they just couldn't remember the names, and then that's the thing which put them off. Because I'm in the same position. I can remember the
I'm awful at names.
The types of characters they all are, but not necessarily what their names is. Jiro Hitoyoshi.
Is that the guy? Okay.
Well, yes.
I like his character turns into a centaur robot.
Yes,
I think it's cool. To the car in general, even in car form, it's got pretty sweet motor, I must say. That's one for your top anime characters now.
And there's you also see in the future bit, there's a kid called Furuta, appears to be a ghost who can change into cartoon animals.
He's Beast Boy.
Yes. Yeah, I'm interested to see what other types of super being they reference as they go along as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board, like I said. I want to see what turn of events causes him to rail against the organization he works for. Obviously, is it some kind of bad blood, some kind of moral difference, something like that? Who knows? It could be all we'll find out.
And if you're in America, you can watch that on Funimation's site. And if you're in the UK, you can watch it on Daisuke's site, but a week behind Funimation.
That's fine by me.
But they've got loads of making ofs as well, haven't they? That's their Daisuke exclusive, which I've not watched any of those.
No.
Okay, let's go on to the stuff Dwayne's watched.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
I guess you had to, I suppose it kind of fit in like a lot there in space of a week, you know.
Yeah.
So it's be a big kind of ask of you all the same. Like we, like me and Brian,
like
probably
forgetting
just watch news from the off. So
okay, yeah. Let's go with Mr. Osimatsu, episodes 1 and 2. Let's start with episode 1. Dwayne, we've been telling you to watch this for a couple of weeks. What was your opinion when you finally saw episode 1?
Well, initially, so it starts off in the black and white crappy animation thing, and I was like, yeah, okay, I see what they're doing here. And then it turns into, what was that thing with the academy that has like a host club?
Orange school. Yes, it's,
it basically turns into that for a second.
And then it turns into, I can't remember what it's called. The
every other anime.
The boy band idol anime. I can't remember what it's called. Utapri.
I
think it's the initials of it.
Yeah.
I think it opens on that, but then it kind of cuts to the academy. Also, they can shoot lasers.
But also, like, a magical boy team, or their magical powers can save the world.
Yes. So they,
then there's a few more things in there as well.
For those people who haven't seen it yet, the gist of this first episode is that the characters from the Osimatsu-kun anime, which ran in the 60s and then again in the 80s, the 60s versions of them at the start of the episode have heard they're getting a new series to celebrate the 80th anniversary of the birth of their creator. But they're worried that their 60s style comedy hijinks will not work for a modern audience. And so they decide to update themselves for a modern audience, and then it's all slowly unravels throughout the episode.
You basically just think, okay, if we're just kind of play this anime, make sure we have everything that's cool anime or all the things cool anime and just throw all at the wall and see what sticks, even if things don't gel together as well as you might think.
And we should say the main characters are six sextuplets, identical sextuplets. There is Osomatsu, Karamatsu, Koromatsu, Ichibatsu, Jushibatsu, and Todomatsu. And then there's like two other characters who get fairly significant roles in these first couple of episodes. Iyami, who is a man who claims to be from France. He has a Beatles wig, three buck teeth, which are huge, and a thin moustache. And in the 60s version, he does all sorts of posing and shrieking and sort of adding bits to his words and referring himself as me. And then the other character is Chibita, who is a tiny child who is the same age as the sextuplets, even though being tiny. And basically, in the 80s version, those two pretty much took over the show. And indeed, they took over the comic in the 60s as it went on.
I'm going to guess in the original run. I didn't actually know this was a thing. I was like, did they make up like a fake cartoon from the past? But I thought that would have been fun. But yeah, I'm going to guess in the original one, the sextuplets were basically indistinguishable, that being the joke.
They all had separate personalities. But yes, the joke is that you can't tell the difference. But
Right.
Yes, but Fujio Akatsuka is the guy who created the original comic. And other things he was noticeable for were Tensai Bakubon, another series where other characters gradually take over the show from the title character. Maretsu Ataro and Himitsu no Ako-chan, which was the first Magical Girl manga?
Yeah, I've heard that name before.
Yeah, there's been like three series, and then there's like a recent live-action version, I believe, with her as an adult, which is what this show eventually turns out to be.
Yeah.
And this show is directed by Yuichi Fujita, who did various bits of Gintama and Good Luck Girl. And you can tell watching this.
Mm-hmm. I was a little, while I really enjoyed the first episode, I was kind of really worried, is I just going to leave it their best joke?
Yeah.
But they're able to really derive a lot of different stuff from different situations. Like, oh, these six guys and their supporting cast over this couple of episodes. There's some moments in the third episode in particular where I just laughed continuously for like a minute on end.
I think every episode's written so far has been written by a guy called Shu Matsubara, and I believe this is the first anime he's ever written.
Okay. It's just a comedy writer in general.
I don't know what else they've done, if they've done anything else, or whether it's a pseudonym. But the pair are willing to lead heavily into jokes. It's like how much, because when I first saw the first episode where they switched to the animation styles, I thought, this is a nice joke, but surely it's going to end soon.
Yeah, I know. I figured that was going to be like, oh, that's just, and then I was like, that's going to end so quick.
Oh no, they're running with this. This is ridiculously audacious.
They're going to keep going. They're going to do sports anime. They're going to do show on action anime.
They're
going to have the French guy
do actual named anime.
Yeah, because
they're going to the French guy show up and come like he just walked out of Rose of Versailles.
He does have that kind of hair.
Yes, because the only thing I knew about Osomatsu-kun going in was that Iaomi had taken over the show eventually, and the comic eventually. So that's why I did like the joke when it all starts to unravel of him showing up in his Bishonen form saying, I'm here to take over the anime.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's such a mad idea, because I mean, like, that obviously happened in old comics and stuff all the time, like with Snoopy in Peanuts and in Popeye in, what were those, weren't those comics just called like Olive Oil?
Thimble Theater, they were.
Thimble Theater, yeah. But it was about her family.
Yes,
like.
And then Popeye shows up, and then Popeye's like a massively popular character, so it becomes his story.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. And it'd be so funny, like, imagine they announced, like, hey, we're doing a new Olive Oil cartoon. Also, Popeye might be there, so, if that's your thing. It's such an odd decision. But they're making it really work, with callbacks like that.
Yeah, there's the other callback is when Chibita shows up as a titan. And I believe one of the brothers says it's been 27 years, which is how long it's been since the last series when Chibita took over their show.
I guess, and then like, once, kind of like, on the course so far of what's been released, what's come out so far, like the next episode then is like two separate stories and a half. And then the episode after that, then it's just like, very short sort of sketch comedy style things. So I wonder, are they going to chop it out even more next episode? I don't know. Maybe just go back.
I think it's
to
back to two next week.
Stories.
But it was again. The third episode is audacious for that reason. It is just a sketch show with these characters.
Well, that's fine.
There were good jokes, so I don't mind at all.
So the second episode, the first half is kind of a bit of a kaiji parody. In sorts.
Yeah.
Where they try to find a job and Iaomi gives them this job, which is basically selling them into slavery, which becomes like a satire on being an adult. Fortunately, basically. Mm-hmm.
I do like to think of that they're basically up to no good. It's like, what is this mysterious thing they're making? They're making that weirdly, I say weirdly faced guy. But the guy with the particularly wide mouth.
Yeah, I can't remember which guy is he. Yeah. It's not Decapan. It's
Jiguzo. I'm seeing in the names here. Maybe that's him. Was it Dayon?
Dayon, I think. Yes. Because then, did you notice in the second half? Is because this factory is building multiples of him, and then the second half.
Yeah, and putting him in a box and shipping him out. It's really creepy.
In the second half, I think he shows up like in the background of each time he runs into one of his brothers. There's a different one of him in the background doing different things.
Well, some kind of like scary like automaton who's gonna like just take over all labor in Japan.
It's so hard to find work.
It says here in the wiki that he never plays a main role but often plays a supporting role such as sheriff. So apparently, so obviously his like purpose in the strip would change depending on what he was needed for.
Right, okay.
So I guess the artist thought, I'm not going to bother making a new design each time. It's going to be my stock character design for anybody. It could be a baker, it could be a waiter, it could be anybody. This is my stock design. I'm going to go with this.
But the second half of the first episode is Otsumatsu kind of just being a dick to his brothers, or just kind of interfering with them.
Yeah.
Or sometimes them just being dicks back.
Yeah, or turning into
the
a
second episode.
Yeah. It's amazing. Right, I suppose, I mean, like, the second episode does a good job, I think you said it, Niall, of kind of getting you across the different brothers, how they're very different.
Yeah.
In both the episodes, but the job interview bit, which is great, like, because it's shot from exactly the same thing, and yet they carry themselves entirely differently.
Yeah. I thought it would take me longer to know when I kind of get it now, but I kind of pick up even from the voices a little bit, and also personalities, which one is which.
I'm going to forget which name is which. I'll have to make cliff notes for myself.
Yeah.
I know, it's like, it was Juicy Matsu. Anyways, the guy voiced by Daisuke Ono, aka Joe Taro from Adventures Crusaders, no, he's the guy who's trying to be kind of cool all the time, which that suits him down on the ground.
Yeah, except not.
Oh,
good
no,
at
no, no. He's Juicy Matsu. He's the insane one.
Oh, brilliant! I love the insane one.
Easy. Okay.
Yes.
Well, yeah, like I said, there's going to be a lot of mix-ups in names and who's
who. At least
according
to the wiki that I'm looking at. But let me just check all the places as well. Because this is the other part of this big appeal, is that it has all the sexy voice actors on it. It pretty much isn't it like a lot of the guys from Polar Bear Cafe, which was the other, come and listen to the sexy voices of the sexy voice actors doing comedy.
Yeah, this guy, Jun Fukuyama, he's pops up in a bunch of things. Yeah, he's fucking Lelouch Lamperouge.
Yeah, it's Hiroshi Kamiya as Korematsu. I don't know what he's famous for. He's Trafalgar Law in One Piece. There you go.
So wait, okay, right. To go through them, right? You got Osamatsu, who's the eldest of the sex doubles.
Yes, the main character, ostensibly.
But presumably only by minutes or something. I don't know what his deal is. He just seems kind of like a jerk, for the most part.
Yeah, I think so.
So that's pretty much it. Okay.
But he's the eldest, so he's supposed to be like one who knows best. So you gotta follow his lead.
Yes.
You got the guy who's generally depicted as nerdy and reacting poorly to all the other guys' bullshit.
Yes, Chorimatsu the third.
Chorimatsu.
Oldest. You got Karamatsu, who's the one who tries to be cool.
Yeah.
Ichimatsu, who's the one who is lazy, depressed. Jushimatsu, the one who's gone insane. And Tojimatsu, who's the youngest one, and as we see in the second episode, is actually successful with women, unlike his older brother.
Which is weird, because it's like the women think, oh my god, he's beautiful. It's like, but they all look the fucking same.
No, they don't. They've all got slightly different expressions. He's got like that weird kissy mouth. Tojimatsu has, isn't it? Whereas Jushimatsu's mouth is always like a gaping chasm.
Mm-hmm. Keep up, Dwayne. Come on.
It's difficult. Yeah, this one was quite fun. I gotta say, I enjoyed it a whole bunch.
Yeah, my favorite bit of the second half was, well, there are two favorite bits. The first bit is obviously the bit where Chorimatsu is queuing up to meet the idol.
That's amazing. I did love that bit.
Some good grimacing there, yeah.
And then the sort of mock sentimental bit where Chibita's explaining how he envied them as kids,
because
he was an only child and he had brothers. And it's supposed to be, you think it's going to get through to Osamatsu, and then Osamatsu fires off this rant about how Chibita doesn't understand. He doesn't have five comrades, he has five enemies.
Yeah, he's clearly gotten very drunk as well, so it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Brothers is assholes. It's pretty great.
You were there, man. You were there growing up. But you kind of were.
And then as he walks home, he thinks about forgiving them and then walks in and discovers they have literally replaced him
with some random old...
With the guy who keeps appearing in everything.
Okay, yeah.
He created him in the factory to replace you. It's your new brother. He will be the most beloved of us all.
I did like some of the realistic depictions of them in the first episode as well, because some of those guys do not translate to modern anime sensibilities. My favorite, the guy who basically dresses like a baby.
Yes.
A big shiny man.
Decapan.
Yeah.
The guy with huge striped pants.
Yeah, exactly.
I love this segment in the third episode where he's like, you know, oh, here he comes. He's supposed to take off of Anpan Man, I suppose. Like, here he comes again, Decapan Man. And he's just doing incredibly inappropriate things and getting killed for
him. Apparently that's the thing. He used to hide various things in these large pair of striped pants in the original strip. But now he runs afoul of the anime censorship.
He goes to prison and he still gets getting in trouble then, and then he finally gets out and he's like, please, sir, you got me up before. Let's do it again. Please, I'm freezing over here. It's like, I can't be inappropriate. I can't do it.
I like you said, Brian, I did like the what do you call those things? Idle meeting things where you handshaking events or something? I'm not sure of the term.
Yeah, it's just the drawing of a horrified expression. that was pretty great.
And it's kind of like they've been doing with like South Park forever. Like when you bleep out the word, it's funnier than actually hearing the word.
And also the bleeping keeps on missing the word sex as it further it goes along.
Yeah, it's like the guy's editing it while it's happening. It's like, you hear shit.
X!
Oh, that's pretty great.
But wait till you see the final sketch in episode 3. Wait till you see that sketch. Quite the thing. But, of course, talk of Anpan Man is a great segue to Wanpan Man.
That's not quite correct.
That is how it's supposed to be said.
Is it?
But they wear the same costume, so...
singing in the thing. I assume you're just supposed to scream it every time.
Yeah, One Punch Man. Episodes 1 to 3, adaptation of, who's it by, Won and...
Won and the artwork by Yusuke Murata.
That's the fella, which is in turn based on Won's webcomic, which was artwork by him. And, yeah, we watched the first 3 episodes, and it's a pretty faithful adaptation so far.
Yep.
So, One Punch Man, what's it about?
It's about a man who became so strong that his hair fell out, and he's a superhero as a hobby, and he can defeat any villain or evil threat in one punch. Hence the name.
And that's very depressing.
Yes, he's having an existential crisis over this now, because he can't find anything that's a challenge for him or give him any kind of meaningful reason to be this strong. So he's basically kind of whiling away his days, just going out and doing a shopping, watching TV in his apartment, and just kind of pondering the fun. What's it all mean, man? Why did it get so strong? What's the point of it all? Which is quite a lofty theme to have in your superhero cartoon, but it works. They make it work very well.
Yes, he's a superhero for fun.
But he's not having much fun doing it, though. No. Just, again, the converse thing.
I like the opening where we have Blue Piccolo arriving from space, apparently. Not actually from
space.
Oh,
he's not
from space,
no. He's been created he's actually by from the Earth. Pollution of Earth. Yeah.
He's a vaccine.
I know he's Vaccine Man, but, you know, I'm just going to call him Blue Piccolo.
Yeah, like Fat Beerus.
Yeah. Also, a lot of guys' butts in this, but no dicks, which I'm happy with. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't remember there being any dicks in the comic.
Well, with the level of detail, it renders a lot of things. That's probably for the best.
Yes.
Blue Piccolo turns into like a horrible monster trying to kill a little girl, and One Punch Man takes him out, and then he's really annoyed. It's a good opener. Because he has his like, I have been created by the pollution of the world, and I am the world's antibody, and I will destroy all of humanity. It's a virus on the planet. You know, it's like everyone has a really detailed backstory, and then they die. Is quite often the way.
You get the weirdest villains too. Like, you know, you get a man who turned into a crab monster because he kept eating too much crab. And a guy who loves carrots because he turned into a carrot monster. It's like when you were like growing up, when you were told, oh, you're going to eat so much sausage, you're going to turn into that big sausage one day if you don't stop. Apparently that would happen. There's probably a guy out there.
Just the top half of you.
Yes.
The bottom half of you will have human legs, and you'll only be able to put on underpants, presumably, because I imagine pants are too difficult to work if you have claws for hands. That's no good.
Yes. As...
you can't change them. It was smell awful.
I think we might learn in episode 4 that this encounter is more important than it seems in episode 1.
Oh, I was hoping it was just some bullshit guy who ate too much crabs.
Oh, no. He is a bullshit guy who ate too much crabs. It's more to do with the kid who drew nipples on him.
Oh, that little bollocks.
The kid with the butt chin.
Yes.
Forgot that one.
Yeah, it cuts back to, like, what, 3 years prior. Was it 3 years?
Yeah. Is there about to?
I think it wasn't that long ago. This guy kind of walking home and crabbing through town. Looking for the butt-chinned boy. And he decides not to kill the guy because the guy's so depressed from not being able to get a job. Like, again, kind of parallels with Osamatsu in episode 2.
He's kind of saying, like, your eyes are like mine. They're dead and lifeless. You don't care about anything anymore.
I'll let you live.
We are kindred spirits.
And then he's like, I've got to go kill a kid with a big chin or something?
Yes, that's what he says.
Yeah, he's got a butt chin.
Yeah. It's this kid with the most ridiculous budget. That was pretty great because I was just like, that's impossibly big. And the way they kind of incorporate that in the animation, he's trying to play like keepy uppy and he keeps hitting off his own chin.
It's the fact the kid continues to be a dick to Crab Lansay.
It never stops. But yeah, he drew nipples on Crab Lansay while he was asleep in the park. Because I guess he has no place to live, poor Crab Lante. And he can't even wash it off because he can't hold a towel with these claws. It's really dumb because they're really badly drawn on nipples. And I imagine how that would be very frustrating for a crab man who only wears underpants. It sounds like I'm talking complete bullshit, yeah. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of it. That actual thing of it, I was just like, Saitama?
Yeah, Saitama.
Yeah.
Saitama, where he like decides to be like a kind of badass. He gets kicked around a bit, but he pulls out his eye, the crab eye, with his tie.
Yes. Yeah.
And all his internal organs. So is that how you're supposed to eat crab? I'm not entirely sure. I haven't eaten crab.
I don't know.
And that's not even.
That's not nearly the most gory thing that's happened.
Yeah, that's not even the entire episode yet. There's still more to come in this first episode.
Yeah.
We've had two villains beaten up. Then we get a bodybuilder who's been given an experimental serum by his brother, and he's basically become a giant.
He's become a titan.
Bigger than a titan. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he's way bigger, absolutely. But it's kind of like the grey skin, muscle on the outside, and some exposed bone kind of thing going on. And his brother's just madly ranting on his head. Some weird scientist dude. And I love the, it's like, I made this, hey, you know, you're trying to be the world's strongest man. I made this stuff for you. And also, I flavored it with strawberry, because I know you like that. And he's like, oh man, thanks.
Thanks, bro. That's really thoughtful of you. You're all looking out for me.
Ah, what lovely people, if only they weren't bent on world destruction.
Yeah, but arguably Saitama causes more destruction than they did when he punches the giant and it falls on the city.
The bit that made me laugh the most in that where is his brother saying, like, you can see him in the background of some of the shots. It was like, hey, there's a dude on your shoulder. Kill the dude on your shoulder. And he slaps the shoulder that his brother's on. He's like, what have I done?
He's just naturally like, just kind of left-handed, so it's like...
To see the horror on that giant's face was pretty great. But yeah, I think it says, like, I'm going to guess the cities in this are just numbered, or rather,
yes,
numbered by
letter.
I
think he lives in City Z.
Yeah, and City A and B are already destroyed.
Yes.
B by him knocking the giant on top of it.
Yeah, the body count in this, that's the one thing about the anime. I felt like the body count comes across more in the anime than it does in the comic.
It doesn't concentrate the wholesale destruction of cities, does it, as much?
Yeah. I've seen the comment that City Zeb lives now, and it's slowly gets like more and more depopulated, the more like threats arrive there, often seeking Saitama himself to fight him. And you've seen like the streets outside, you know, like, you know, he punches guys into the wall, like, you know, outside his apartment building, and there's a big crater in it. And then you see, like, later on in the story, like, no, but that crater is still there. Like, no, the council isn't coming around to fix this, because just why bother when we get attacked by a giant monster tomorrow anyway?
Oh, dear. Yeah, there must be a lot of, well, maybe construction going on, but, yeah. I did like him just walking through the streets, just and there's just buildings wrecked and giant craters in the city. It's just because monsters are always attacking. What a horrible world they live in. And his main concern is, you know, just the... get to the shops on time.
The shops got to get there in time for the Saturday sale. Everything's half off.
It was kind of good, the introduction of the giant, where he's just in a supermarket and he's trying to get change out of his little man purse. It's like, oh, I got change for that. And then, like, a footstep just takes half of the department store away.
Then you've got subterranean guys after that, which turns out to be a dream.
Some fucking, yeah, it's a dream sequence, but goddamn, is that a pretty dream sequence? I was so much more invested in this episode, like episode one, than I have been in so far in Dragon Ball.
Well, as much,
and I know all of this, none of this matters. Is
I was
going to
say, as much happens in this one episode than in all those 14 episodes of Dragon Ball Super we watched.
You get it all. You get action. You get a little bit of comedy. You get a little bit of pathos. It's got it all.
You got a lot of motherfuckers getting fucked up.
Yeah, so we get this wild fight with the subterraneans, and he wakes up, and there is actually a subterranean invasion going on, which he...
But they're not that impressive.
No, because he beats their king. That's it. They surrender.
And they surrender. I love the flag sticking up. Sorry!
Sorry, attack you.
Then we get a glimpse of our other main character. Is it Genos or Genos? I didn't listen hard. Genos, that's it.
Genos, I think it is.
And who we meet in the second episode, the cyborg Genos. And we also meet the animal men of the House of Evolution.
Yeah. What I love about the designs in this is you would totally watch something like this. It's like, man, this show looks great. Action looks great. And the designs of the characters look great. And then it's just all for bullshit. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get the reaction shots of Saitama where he's... face returns to hell.
He's been drawn like a child.
Well, used to draw him.
Yeah. It's beautiful. I don't mean to knock your man's like look, but it's just the fact that he's just an oval with eyes and a generally slightly smiling mouth.
Some guys went off on like a random one. Yeah, I am the one king of bismuth and the most powerful DNA pushed together in one body. And you see, he cuts back to that side timer, one with this gorgeous face, come on, saying. Okay. How about that? It's just completely taking it in stride.
Yeah, so the initial episode is Genos kind of coming in from the last episode, and there's a bunch of desiccated cow corpses because there's like a mosquito swarm and everyone has to stay inside to stay away from the mosquitoes. And he's coming into town to find out what's up with this thing. And meanwhile, Saitama is trying to kill one mosquito. But he can't quite get it. You know, like you're trying to swallow the fly kind of thing.
Yeah, at last. But, worthy of his skill.
It kind of explains how he's completely invulnerable as well, because he's just there, like, slapping his own arm and his own face. And I was like, is he not going to... Oh, wait. He's so strong that he's actually too strong to hurt himself. That kind of weird logic. So, therefore, since he can kill everyone in one punch, nothing can kill him at all. It's some kind of weird logic like that. Because the massive, like, thooms as he's just, like, slapping his own cheek are pretty great.
I really didn't destroy his apartment. They're trying to get that fly. The thing about power is, you know, it's not that you've ever got the ability to control it.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought like Genos's design is really cool, and then that wasp lady, or sorry, mosquito girl. I mean, like, it's a good design because it's kind of the freaky extra long legs and limbs and stuff, but then, like, they keep zooming in on her butt and boobs as these things tend to go.
Well, if you look real close at a mosquito, I know it's really hard because, you know, they're very, very small. You don't see them, you might get a chance. If you look really, really close to it, that's all in there.
Yeah, it's a really good design. But, I and it's just kind of them thrown down downtown, and eventually, Saitama comes in, still trying to spray the one mosquito, but he keeps running into his own raid spray or whatever. It's getting a mouthful of it. pretty cool, really cool sequences of just the Genos's fire powers, or is it fire or electricity? Because at some points it looks like both. Maybe it's both. It's
some kind of heat blast, anyway.
I guess it gets
electrically generated. Maybe some gas. he gets like a number of kind of upgrades and new parts and stuff. Story goes on, so I don't know. I'm not sure why he's powered by some kind of like fusion reactor or something.
Yeah, because he's the guy who gets probably torn apart the most.
I did like that shot of the mosquito girl kind of ripping off his arm. It's like, what'll I take next? Your legs? She's like, huh, where's my legs? And he's ripped off her legs. And I'm just like, well, that's tit for tat. That's okay. But, he gets messed up this episode, and I'm going to guess pretty much all the time. In the most, I get gory for the equivalent of a cyborg way.
Apparently, his techniques are machine gun blow. He throws a chain of fast punches and incinerate. He launches a concentrated beam to rapidly heat up a target to the point of being able to melt various metals.
When he said, like, it's like, oh, I only incinerated the entire mosquito swarm because I knew everyone was gone in a 5-block radius. Oh, wait, except for that weird guy who came up to me trying to kill a mosquito. He's just standing there with all his clothes burnt off. It's like, hey, dude, you totally saved me from that mosquito. Thanks, man.
Wow. That does quite a blast.
The slap he finishes off Mosquito Girl with is pretty good. It's just like, oh, just kind of splatters over a building. You know the way a mosquito splats like that, but like building size, way worse.
A person.
that was a pretty fun one. It was a lot more... The first episode was like, what, three or four different stories?
You've forgotten the other guys who show up in this episode.
Yeah.
Which other guys show up in this one?
Oh, yeah. Kamakuri, Ground Dragon, Frogman,
oh, yeah, Slugurus, yeah, sorry.
Beast King,
Cyborg Gorilla.
Armored Gorilla, yes.
There's so much in there, I find hard to remember it all. I was like, oh, I hope they're not going to kill the mole. I think that thing is adorable.
I believe he's splattered up the side of a building.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Also, it's like you send in your, the guy who kind of wrecks his place a bit.
Kamakiri, is that the grasshopper guy?
Yeah. But why the fuck would you build a frog and a slug man? Because those guys seem to be fucking useless.
You got to try everything to...
I guess. You got to see what sticks. I mean, like, Saitama doesn't even initially kill them. He just knocks them into the pavement.
Yeah. But he also sent, like, the second and third most powerful thing and animal fighters they had. And, like, Genos takes out, like the cyborg girl, and then, like, that's how it just destroys the lion man. And then we cut back to... Genos and the Armor Gorilla now, and like, no, the gross alchemist, you know, saying, you may have defeated me without, I was that the third most powerful. You will not stand a chance against the Beast King, who's second most powerful above me, and it's like holding up some kind of, like, entrance with an eyeball. Oh, you mean this guy right here?
And it's then, like, I'll tell you anything, please don't kill me. Yeah, hey, what happened to your cool robot voice? It's like, I'm just trying to be cool, you guys, please don't kill me. I'm just a gorilla.
I love that gorilla, man. I love it in the next episode when they're dick, you know, he tells them, you know, the whole history of House Evolution, and then, like, then they go off to finish him off, and then I better warn the House Evolution about this.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's such a really dumb visual, but that's great. Cool. Oh, actually, yeah, we skipped that as well. Saitama wants you to sum up your origin story in 20 words or less, because it just... He doesn't have the time, even though he doesn't really do anything.
He's so sick of all this. He's like, yes, House of Vision. Once 10 years ago, as a scientist, he was brilliant, but he was shunned by the film by the world. And then, you know, he went mad. He found the secret of cloning and gene splicing. He created a number of, like, the horrible beast boys to take over the world. He's like, get to the end of the story. Come on, why is it? Where's the guy? How do I punch him?
Also, I kept reading his name as Dr. Genius, which I thought was a better name. But...
Well, there's Genus and then there's Genos, and I thought, that's gotta be confusing. Why are you using that name?
I would think.
Yes, it's Dr. Janus. Yeah.
Dr. Janus, who's created, he was an old, he was a brilliant young scientist who then turned into an old scientist because time.
No, it was he discovered the secret of evolution, that the first thing he did was make us of young.
Yeah, obviously.
Next thing he did was take over the world.
Next thing he did was clone a whole bunch of him to take over the world. Yeah, it's a good plan. The actual, I did like the kind of cut back to the base where all of him are freaking out about, it's like, holy crap, all of them got taken out? Jesus. And him reacting to himself, and it's like, oh my God, did you hear that guy got killed? What? No way. They're going to release the ultimate guy. No way. He'll totally kill us all. Oh, I'm so worried. It's like, don't worry, you guys. And it's like, it's just the same guy over and over again talking to himself. I thought that was a good bit. Because obviously they have their number one strongest dude, Joseph Joestar.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
he's crazy.
He was wonderful. I was just like, ah, oh, no, because I was happy to hear him, but sad because I was like, oh, he's fucked. That's just how this show's going to work.
Yes.
Going to introduce the guy I like and then just murderize him.
Carnage Capito, who is this sort of armored insect man.
Yeah, he looks like your man off. He looked like a few different guys that I can't think of what one of them is, but what's the guy's name from freaking Ninja Scroll, the big rock dude?
Oh, yeah.
He's got that big, long face. Yeah. Kind of the square jaw and everything kind of give me an impression of that kind of thing.
He looks more like the Hulk cross with a Hercules beetle.
Yeah, that was pretty good. We're in episode 3 now. Finally.
Yes. And they agreed to go because it was going to be Saturday. He wanted to do it now because it was Saturday tomorrow because he needs to use his vouchers.
Yeah, it's the sale. Yes. It's the big sale.
Dr. Janus demands Saitama explain the nature of his abilities.
Yeah, they're all really interested to find out his abilities. Of course they are.
Yeah, he's so strong. Like, you know, like Carash Capito was like, I'm going to go run, like, go at this guy. And it's like, and then, no. He's like, he's got me stance that's full of opening bomb where every instinct in me is like screaming at me to stay away from this guy. If I had gone for now, I would have been killed. And
you remember that bit in Dragon Ball where Vegeta jumps back? That must have been delay. Remember the bit in thing where Vegeta jumps back from, from Beerus, because it's like, oh, he can sense that the dude's really strong. And it's like, it was that, but when it cuts back to freaking Saitama, it's got his big fucking dumb face.
Yes, of course. Yeah, Saitama...
making it a million times better.
He reveals that he becomes this
man. That's kind of evil aura.
He's this powerful because he does 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 squats, and 10 kilometers of running every day.
No matter what. You got to do it every day. I know it seems like some days that you'd be like, watch for one day. It's not going to hurt if I just leave it off today. But you do it. And I'm like, that's a good training regime. That's a bunch of exercise. But it's not even like hardcore, you know?
And so they don't believe him.
That's it. It's pretty hard, man. When I was doing like press-ups and like even my elbows are making weird clicking noises, I kept doing it anyway.
Yeah, I guess it's impressive to him because he's exceptionally lazy. It's like, no, you just got to do it every day. Just do this exercise regime and you'll be fairly fit, I would imagine, if you did that every day.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You wouldn't be the strongest man in the universe. I think there's a slight discrepancy.
Well, do it for long enough. Do it for long enough, what do you want me?
What, 3 years? That's long enough. That's all you need. That's all anyone needs, apparently. wonderful.
Yeah, and so he appears to... Capito seems to be beating up Saitama. But it turns out that Saitama...
Because he's done his unleashed form. Yes. Or he looks like an Evangelion. Which might be a joke, I'm not sure.
But yeah, I'm sure it is a joke. But the only reason he appears to be beating him up is because Saitama is calculating what he had said earlier. That he was going to go on a rampage for a week until next Saturday. And say Saitama is a
bit... A week is 7 days. And if next Saturday is like when he's going to stop around, that means today's Saturday. Ah, oh, Mr. Sale! And you can see it. It's like, yeah, he's going to say it. He's going to say it. It's like, yeah, okay. That's his problem. It's the only reason he's letting this guy punch him around.
And so he punches him for wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically how every episode is going to go, I'm guessing.
Well, you'll see.
I mean, like, the base premise is, and then he punches him and wins, but it's what happens around
him. It's
how he punches him.
How,
yeah.
At what point will you actually get to the guy and punch him?
Oh, dear.
And, then Genos. Sorry, not Genos. Genos. Genos, Genos.
Well, Dr. Gina says, is like, I quit.
Yes.
I'm fucking done.
Don't let mad science for good.
And Janus reassures Saitama they've still got time to get back before the shop shuts.
Yeah, if we run, we can probably make it. He's like, really? Yeah, okay. Punches hole inside of building. I did like that thing, actually. It's one time, it's the one time Janus says... it does kind of a funny thing where he just, Saitama's just counting the amount of floors they'll have to go up in the building and he just blows it away. I was just like, that's been reasonably sensible. But it was actually an underground complex. Oh well. Oh, I was hoping he'd keep that poofy hair as well.
That was a plot point in Heroes, wasn't it, at some point?
Was it?
I didn't watch Heroes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I think it's like, it looks like one guy's base is above ground and then gets destroyed, but it turns out that it's underground.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty sure. I've never seen the film. I've only heard it discussed on How Did This Get Made? But Dr. Genus sounds an awful lot like how they were describing the villain to the Whoopi Goldberg / dinosaur film, Theodore Rex.
Oh! Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think you're right about that. Oh, brilliant. Except specifically with dinosaurs in that case, but yeah.
But yeah, so anyone who's... but obviously, more specifically, I imagine it's more supposed to be Island of Dr. Moreau being the inspiration of both of them. But it was the cloning himself thing, I think, is also in Theodore Rex. At least from how they were describing it on that podcast. I mean, I'm never going to watch it. I'm not an insane person. So if anyone who is insane and has watched Theodore Rex, confirm or deny how much influence it has on this really great anime. And we should say, this cartoon looks amazing. Every single episode looks amazing.
Like, I mean, like, if it has a drop-off point, I'm cool with that because it looks so fucking good up to now. Holy crap.
Yeah. They do the kind of like the sort of do a lot of like kind of smearing and all kind of the character will, you know, be moving so fast at different turns, kind of like a blur of color, but that blur of color is like entirely animated in itself.
I mean, like when what was the giant called in the last one, like Bicep Man or something.
I think it was called Barry.
Yeah, I'm not sure he got. I don't think he got a super monster name or whatever.
Oh, okay, right. That guy when they had that fight and went like super loose to the point where everything looked like it was kind of like it was they were trying to animate something rubbery or something like that. But it looked really nice. Like it was a super loose style that just. And the thing is, like, he defeats guys in one punch, so you don't really have to animate anything besides that, but they go to such lengths. It's wonderful.
Well, it has a hard job, because it's got to look, match up to what the comic looks. I don't think they go exactly, they sort of make it awesome in its own way. And we should say it's directed by Shingo Natsumi, who directed Space Dandy. And I think it shares sort of a willingness to go in different artistic directions, whatever fits best, I think, and let animators do their thing.
This is like a fucking playground. Then just go wild, and you know, but, like let the bad guy beat up Saitama whatever way you want. But it's, you know, this is like, no, your only brief is just he's gonna get punched in the end, explode into a shower of gore. But anything leading up to that is fair game. Do whatever the hell you want.
I mean, like, to be fair, I mean, like, just bold on its face, obviously, is what this is doing. That's the plot of every, like, shonen thing, essentially. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, like, we know Luffy's going to win. We know it's going to turn out okay. But how about we just go straight to the point and it's like, yeah, he's going to beat him in the punch.
I would like One Piece. It's not going to take 2 years to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be like, no fun. How's Kenshiro? You know Kenshiro's going to punch the guy and make him explode, but how's he going to do it? You know,
how's he going to make him explode?
You know Gogo Trippie is just going to shoot the guy. So, you know, how's he going to do it? That's all it is.
Exactly.
It's what about the journey, man, a fun destination, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And that's the kind of thing. It was like, yeah, we know he's going to win. It's fine. He's basically unbeatable, but that's the fun of it. Yeah. I'm wondering if they're just going to work their way down the alphabet of cities.
Well, they live in either, as I say, I can't remember how many more get destroyed. Yeah. I mean, I've got the first two volumes in print.
Okay.
And then obviously how long have I been reading the Weekly Shonen Jump digitally? A couple of years now. So I've read a couple of years worth of, he comes out fairly irregularly and often he'll redraw a chapter. Like add stuff.
Just to get it right.
Add stuff in. And there's a bunch of side stories as well. Which I don't know whether they're going to do the side stories or not. Because often the side stories are sort of Saitama as a kid. Saitama before he ran into that crab monster. But you also occasionally get glimpses of other characters as kids as well. Who we haven't met yet.
Is there many other superheroes in it?
There's
loads of them.
Excellent. Okay. Because it's like, we're sending Lightning Larry and fucking Smile Man there, and then we see them and they're just both taken out like straight away.
Yeah, I think you'll see that sort of stuff I think should get introduced in the next episode.
Excellent.
Yeah. There's a whole Justice League, if you will, of superheroes.
Yes.
And all like the different rankings and different kind of assignments based on how strong they are. I mean, you haven't even seen Watchdog Man yet. It was a superhero goes around in a dog costume and he supposedly be like quite strong. Quite strong indeed.
I might leave off reading it another bit just because it's such fun to get this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and
fresh.
I think they're going
to
go through a hell of a lot of the comic because the first volume is covered in the first two episodes. And later volumes have barely got any chapters of the story. They've often got, like, huge amounts of side story stuff. So if they don't do any of the side stories, they can get pretty deep into the comic.
Okay. And excellent.
There's a couple of obvious drop-off points. And also, of course, there's the thing that one has actually done the story further on than Murata's drawn his version of it. So there's...
Right, so they have a script to work from.
Yes. So if they wanted to go further, they could actually move past Murata's work.
Jeez.
And go beyond it. Because at the minute they're in a story, it's a bit weird. It appeared they're in the middle of one story, and then another story has kind of started up this week. At least in the Viz digital version.
Okay.
Which means they might not go that far. They might just stop at the arc before that, which would be a good place to stop because it would give you like a ridiculous level of threat.
Yeah.
And a lot of the heroes teaming up together.
I don't know. These kind of things, I don't know if like the DC and Marvel movies have inspired this new kind of thing, but I like people just making, here, I've met an entire universe of freaking heroes. They have more appeal to me than the old stuff these days. Even if you're doing it for complete bullshit, that's even better.
Yep. Sure. I just like how they can like go such efforts and all that stuff, but have these kind of great character designs, have these kind of cool characters, and then they're immediately taken out. They're not afraid to put that effort in, and then this guy is just going to get like killed immediately or defeated immediately. And then he's out of the story, but we're going to put in as much effort as would for our main guys anyway.
you remember those, I can't think of your man's name who does Bleach, but his prior thing, Zombie Powder?
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I've invented this cool character, and then he'd just kill him off.
To be fair, that's Bleach as well.
Yeah, but they can come back in Bleach, because if you die, where do you go? Fucking heaven. They're in fucking heaven.
But what if
heaven.
You die in heaven? Well, then the scientist brings you back as a zombie.
Yeah, it's just, but that's what I mean. Like, these motherfuckers were just dead. It's like, you like that guy? Good, he's dead.
Because that's what's happened. That's what's happened recently in Bleach, is you've gone through this invasion arc where you've had, like, loads of people on both sides get killed off. And then, recently, your mad scientist guy on the good guy's side has just basically brought a load of them back as the undead, which he controls. And now they've switched sides because they were a bit annoyed at the guys who got them killed in the first place.
Why is Mithrin, like, long-running Shonen Jump, like, comics, and just resorting to bringing him up back as zombies arc lately? Because I wonder why it's like, fucking Tite Kubo and fucking Kishimoto from Naruto comparing notes at all, but they kind of been going off in pretty similar directions, I noticed.
It's probably just an easy way to kind of keep a thing running, while also you raise the stakes by killing dudes, but you can just bring them back as a threat now.
Are they being brought back, but though, by a guy shaped like a 10-pin bowling pin who drains shadows out of people?
See, that's okay. That's fine.
Did it first, did it better.
Oh, dear.
Gosh.
I must say as well, you have a kick-ass opening to One Punch Man, sound by Jam Project. That gets me, as most openings for anime done by Jam Project will, it gets me totally pumped every time. I never skip it.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm enjoying the kind of heavy metal guitar kind of shit playing, even during the episodes at some points. It's pretty great.
I know you looked a bit at the end, but he goes, I want to be a sack, yo hero!
I love that thing. I guess you could look at One Punch Man as the ultimate, like, wish fulfillment kind of gone wrong kind of thing. As a kid, I want to be able to beat anyone in one punch, and now I can. But,
okay, yeah, so don't let anyone tell you there's not any good anime to watch.
Oh, there's so much.
There's quite a bit.
There's so much, I haven't watched it all.
I know, I'm behind on Ushio and Tora, because for some reason I was watching Dragon Ball Super instead.
like a bunch of dopes.
What a mistake. So I think that ends this week's episode of Let's Go. Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye. Maybe Anthony will be back next week.
Bye.
Adios, muchachos.